Being resilient. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 215.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, 'cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another brand new episode of the Art of Bombing podcast. I'm your host, Dan Bublitz Jr., as it is my podcast still. I haven't went anywhere. It's still my podcast. I'm still the host, whether you like it or not. Hopefully you do, because it is my podcast. So here I am. It is Tuesday, August 10th, 2021. Hope you all had a great week. I hope you're getting out and living life and being safe while you live life. Great conversation today. Have a great guest. Elise Cole is my guest today. Fantastic comic from the Twin Cities. We talked about a lot of things. I'm not going to get into it now because that's what the conversation is. I want you to listen to the conversation. But before we get to the conversation, I do have to handle the business. Take care of that housekeeping, you know, all that stuff. First thing on the docket is the Dan on the Run comedy tour continues. Friday, August 13th, 2021, I will be at the Liner in Cadott, Wisconsin. Cadott? I'm not sure how you say that. Hopefully I said that right. Cadott, Wisconsin. Then Saturday, August 14th, I will be at Woody's Bar in Joliet, Illinois. If you're in either of those areas, come to the show. And then on Sunday, it's not part of the Dan on the Run comedy tour, but I'm excited. I get to open for my good friend Zoltan, who you might remember if you listen to the podcast. He was a guest on the podcast last year. That was episode 134, almost 100 episodes ago. He was a guest. So go check out the podcast. I would say go check out the show, but unless you already have tickets, you're not going to be able to go to the show because he is a draw and he has sold out the show in Minneapolis. So hopefully you already have your tickets. It's going to be a good time. I'm excited that I get to hang out with my buddy Zoltan while he's in town doing the show. Going to be a good time. All right, next thing up on the list of announcements, we have a brand new podcast. We have a brand new contest for the podcast. That's right, people. That's right, fans of the Art of Bombing. You have a chance to win an official Art of Bombing cartoon logo hat. You've seen me wear the hat. You've seen them advertised. You can buy one if you don't want to win one. But winning one is simple. This is all you got to do to register for a drawing. I'm going to randomly draw a winner at the end of August. And all you need to do to get your name into the drawing is share some of our social media posts. That's all it takes. Or there's another way. You can leave us a 5-star rating and a review. You got to leave a review so I know that you were there on Apple Podcasts. So you do one of those two things. You share any social media post, and I mean any. That can be, it can be on our Facebook, it can be on our Instagram, our Twitter, anything you share, you're automatically going to get your name dropped in for the drawing. Then, if you don't want to do that, if you just want to do a one-time situation, like I said, you can leave a 5-star rating and a review, and then your name will be registered. And you can do both, and you'll get your name in the drawing twice. That's right. The more you share, the more chances you'll have to win. So every time you share one of our social media posts, you will have a chance to win the prize. Your name will be put into the drawing, and then at the end of the month, I will do the drawing, and the winner will be announced September 7th on the episode of The Art of Bombing, and it'll probably be announced in the Art of Bombing newsletter. If you're not on that, you should be. All you got to do is go to artofbombingpod.com to sign up. I've been doing a monthly newsletter for The Art of Bombing. I've been writing little articles about ways to about things related to comedy. July's newsletter, I did an article about getting booked and how I've been booking myself. And then the August newsletter, I did an article about saving money on the road, giving some tips for saving money on the road. So you can do that. Like I said, sign up for that newsletter at artofbombingpod.com. While you're there, if you don't want to try to win a hat, you could buy a hat. There's some other fun stuff, some other merch. You can get T-shirts. You can get the hat. You can get button stickers, the whole nine yards. It's all there. And again, the best way that you can help the show is doing is by rating and reviewing the show. Give us a 5-star rating and leave us a nice review. That definitely helps put us out there. It helps other people discover the show, which is very important to me because I want people to keep listening to the show. That's the best way. But if you want to support financially, you can sign up for the Patreon at patreon.com/artofbombingpod. Or if you just enjoy what I do and you want to give me a little tip, you can do that by buying me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/debubcomedy. Those are both ways you can support the show financially, but you don't have to. And I will give a little warning. I will be running ads here pretty soon. I was going to start running ads in June, and something kind of I got behind on it. But by September, I will be running ads on the show. So keep that in mind. If you want ad-free content, you can get that at patreon.com. So you still have time to decide if you want to sign up for that or not. But ads will be coming as we grow and evolve as a podcast. You know, we got to do it. All right. So that's enough of the business. Housekeeping has been handled. We've cleaned up the shop. We cleaned up the studio. I don't know. I don't even know what I'm talking about. I'm just babbling. All right, let's get into this fantastic conversation. But real quick, another quick thing before we get into this conversation, just to give you a heads up on the clip that I'm going to be playing for Elise. It's a funny set. It's going to make more sense later in the show. We actually talked about it in the show, and she said she should send it to me to put on the show, and then we decided to do it. Now, I could play it later, but that's no fun. So just a little heads up. It'll all make sense once you're done listening to the entire podcast. When you listen to the entirety of this podcast, you will understand. All right, here we go. Here's my great conversation with the very funny and the very delightful Elise Cole. Enjoy.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
How you doing, Acme? All right, making sure you're still there. I got in trouble a couple weeks ago. I got censored at an open mic. You want to know why? I said boys and girls are different. Fucking edgy, right? I said boys and girls are different. Next time I went back, the host of that open mic said, hey, listen, you can go on tonight, but I'm going to have to ask you not to do any of that material about boys and girls. This is for real. I go, why? And he goes, well, it's just the last time you were here, someone got offended that you said there are only two genders. I said, no, I didn't. I said at my family picnic, all we had were peaches and bananas. I did not say there are no other kinds of fruit. That is not what happened. I said, when two things are not the same, they are different, right? Like cats and dogs, the sun and the moon, apples and idiots. I know. Apples and idiots are both things that can't think. But apples are delicious in pie, and idiots can't tell the difference between an insult and a fact. Ooh, I got an ooh for that? Come on. Do you know what? Maybe I should have told you who it was. It was a 21-year-old U of M student. Yeah. I can't tell if you're booing because you're on my side or you're not on my side. Here's the thing. I have a hard time taking anybody that age seriously because you're the people who ate Tide Pods. Yes, thanks. You ate soap on purpose. I'm 37. That puts me somewhere between millennial and Gen Z. The dumbest shit we ever did to get high was Whippets, but at least there are drugs in those. Fucking dumb. And they are different. Boys and girls are different. I have three nieces, I have two nephews, and a son. And my nieces are all sisters. So they're only around girls, and my nephews are brothers, and it's bizarre to me. And that's, yeah, I'm a fucking uber-liberal, lefty, rainbow flag-flying fucking ally, and I don't care what my son plays with or how he dresses as long as he leaves me alone. I don't give a shit. I gave him a baby doll. He and my youngest niece are the same age, so we gave him the same doll for Christmas last year. And my niece puts hers in a stroller, and she feeds it and changes its diaper, and my son uses his baby as a ramp to drive his trucks over. I didn't do that to him. All right, this is the last thing I'll say, and then I get out of here. I don't know if I'm going to have time for that, because it's blinking. All right, that's all I wanted to do. Thanks a lot, you guys. Thanks.
For my, like, my website domain, like, owning EliseColeComedy.com, mm-hmm. and then I let that lapse, and now I have to, like, pay them and then figure out how to get it back.
How to get it back, yeah. Yeah, it's, there's a lot of crap we have to do for comedy that people don't think about. That, you know, when somebody says, here's stand-up comic, they just assume, oh, we can go do comedy. You just go perform, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, not so much. And especially now with, like, I'm serious about, I haven't given my notice yet, but being done with my serving job so that I can just do this, because all summer long, like, I've been juggling, you know, somebody will cover my shift so that I can go do a gig, but then I have to pick up shifts for them for the ones that they covered, mm-hmm. which means that I'm working the whole week that I'm at the club and then the week that I'm not at the club because I picked up those other shifts. And it was, like, I think from June 14th to, like, July 10th, I was only at home 4 nights.
Oh, wow.
And we've got a 5-year-old and a dog, and my husband has a full-time job, so it's like, this is too much.
Yeah, definitely got to find some balance there. And, yeah, that's the one thing, too, that's tough with comedy, and especially when you have family, you know, kids and other things going on in life, it's hard to find that balance, for sure. That's why I don't go out to as many open mics as I'd like to during the week, because if I'm on the road during the weekend, when I get home, I want to spend a few days at home with my fiance or my dogs, and plus I got to get caught up. This is a good example. I was on the road for the last 4 days. I'm home. I got home yesterday afternoon at 4. I'm leaving tomorrow first thing in the morning to drive out to Montana. So, like, I'm only home, like, a day and a half.
Yeah.
And then I got all kinds of things I got to do while I'm home to get ready for the trip.
Yeah.
I'm still running late on releasing my podcast today, so I'm doing all kinds of stuff. But that's the life that we chose.
Yeah, and you've been doing this for 4 years.
I've been doing comedy for a lot longer.
Oh, but the podcast,
Oh,
I
the
mean.
Podcast, yeah, for 4 years, yep.
That's like a lifetime in the podcast world.
It almost is, yeah. And I mean, it's interesting because it's come a long ways as far as where it started versus where it is now. But, yeah, I didn't think I would do it more than a year. Truth be told, like, I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do this for, like, you know, a couple months, and then I'll get bored with this, and that'll be it. Well, here we are.
Yeah. Well,
still recording.
And it's so great, though. Like, I remember I was working with one comic who, well, I guess I can say it. I did a show with James Thompson, and he bombed. I mean, it was like a cane off the stage thing where they're like, give him the light.
Oh, wow.
And it was a very interesting gig. It was like a corporate gig, but for like people in recovery, and like they asked me to come as like a sober comic, and I was like, oh, well, I can think of another person who knows something about like addiction and recovery. And he started in with like material about that, and they were like, no.
Yeah, they get, I know I haven't myself performed for any of those kinds of groups, but I know other comics who have, but I do know that they're very strict on that. They don't want material about being, you know, about using and the drug life, even though it's relatable to these people, but it could also be a trigger for them people to be like, I remember that, let's go back.
Yeah, and I was like, I felt so bad because I got the impression that that was the content they wanted, and then they told me to, like, light him and bring him off stage.
Oh.
And afterwards, and he was a total pro. He was completely professional mm-hmm. about it. He was so polite. He was so nice. And then I ran into him in the parking lot later, and he was like, this is great because now I have, like, a story for The Art of Bombing. Like, I hope I get to do that podcast because then I can talk about this. Like, this is the perfect example of that. And I was like, oh, my God. And I also was thinking, like, it does kind of help to know, like, everybody bombs. Even the greats, even the people mm-hmm. that I look up to and I love, like, everybody bombs.
Yeah.
It's part of the deal.
Yep. That's exactly it. That's one of the greatest lessons I've gotten from doing this podcast and talking to other comics is because, you know, it was finding common ground. You know, I went from a place where, oh, my God, am I a terrible comic? Am I never going to be good? I should just quit. Oh, wait a minute. If I'm bombing, I'm doing it right. This is how the process is supposed to go.
Yeah.
If I was going up every night and in my brain crushing, I would probably not be getting any better, and I would be definitely doing it wrong.
And it's like a self-sustaining ecosystem. Like, it weeds people out because either you can tolerate the discomfort of, like, bombing and then be committed to making it better or being willing to abandon it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, either you can handle that or you can't. And the people who can handle, like, just the soul-crushing cringiness of nobody responding for minutes on end and then getting up and doing it again. Like, I think you either have that or you don't.
Yep. Yep. There's it definitely takes a different person to be able to do that. I was in Grand Forks on Sunday and I did a show. And when I was up on stage, I did not feel like I was doing very well. It was one of them situations where there wasn't a lot of laughter, not a lot of, like, applause breaks or anything like that. And, you know, you go through, you power through, you do your stuff, you do your time. And then I got off stage and people were like, oh, that was so great. It was like one of them situations where they just sat there and listened and they were engaged, but they didn't like smile or laugh a lot.
Yeah. You're all laughing on
I'm
the
like,
inside.
Oh.
It's so weird. It's the weirdest when, like, I could see somebody in the front row at House of Comedy one night who did not crack a smile through my entire set. And then afterwards was like, you were wonderful. That was terrific. Like, thank you. I want to be like, could you laugh next time?
Right. Be like, well, that was great. I'm glad you enjoyed me, but can I give you a tip on being a good comedy audience member?
I was so stunned. I was, when he came up to me, I was like, oh, is he going to, like, give me advice? He was like, you were wonderful. I really enjoyed that.
That's definitely a fear that all comics, I think, have when you see somebody in the audience not enjoying themselves. And if you see them coming, that's probably every comic's first thought is, oh, great, they're going to give me advice. Yeah.
Can I tell you something?
Can I tell you a joke you can use?
Yeah. You can have this if you want it. Oh, yeah. Thank you.
But no thanks. Just keep walking. Let's not even make eye contact here.
Yeah. If people have asked me if that happens more as a woman, I don't know. I mean, I don't have anything to compare it to because I've never been a guy, but I think they're, like, when people do that, maybe some people are more inclined to, like, go helpful when it comes to mm-hmm. a female comic. But I think people do it to men and women.
I think so, too. Oh, I have plenty of plenty of audience members that'll tell, you know. I think it's the idea that you're a comic and to them they find that intriguing. And all they have to go off is either what they saw on TV or, you know, the mm-hmm. typical street jokes. And they want to share it with you. And because that happens to me a lot. People are like, oh, have you heard this joke? And then they'll tell you, and then they're like, you can use that. And I'm just like, no, I really can't. But thanks. I appreciate that we shared this moment. You know, because they want to be funny. They want to tell you a joke so they seem funny, because then that way they're, like, on our level.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
that's my perspective on it. Because I was just, I was in Kansas a couple weeks ago, and before the show, there was people that were eating at this bar and pub, and that weren't coming to the show. They were just eating, and then they were going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to stay for the show, but the owner of the bar said that this gentleman wanted to see me, and I went over there to see what he wanted. Now, I thought they were staying for the show or whatever. Maybe they, you know, saw my name and it was going to be some weird small world interaction thing. And he goes, so you're going to be doing a comedy show, right? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, oh, well, can you give us a preview? And I was like, all right, well, for you, I'll, why not? I don't care. Because sometimes when people do that, like, I'll just do a quick one-liner.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll throw something away. I don't care. It's whatever. But then he was like, no, you got to go do it on the microphone. And I was like, I can't do that. These people are about to see a show. I'm not going to go up there and do a whole joke for the whole place.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And we kind of talked. And then he had to tell me a joke. And so he told me this joke. And as soon as he's done, he's like, you can use that. And I'm just like, no, sir, I cannot. But thank you.
Every time that happens, I'm like, why? Just go to an open mic. Why don't you get up there? Don't make me tell your dumb jokes. You tell them.
Yeah, exactly. Go find an open mic. But this guy, he had to be like in his, I would guess, 60s or 70s. It was it was an older couple, but it was. I thought it was kind of adorable, but at the same time, I'm just like, oh, another one.
Yeah.
And so it happens again. Did you perform this last weekend anywhere? Were you up anywhere?
I honestly don't remember between, like, the restaurant and my son being in two different day camp programs every other day of the week. I'm like, I don't even know what day it is. Today's Tuesday. Tuesday. No. So this past weekend I was working at the restaurant.
So, a little off weekend from comedy. As I say, because otherwise you keep pretty busy. Because you're a regular MC at Acme now,
mm-hmm.
and then you also do a lot of weekends over at House of Comedy, so mm-hmm. you're keeping pretty busy on that front.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's a couple of sort of third-party bookers that have sent me on gigs to the Dakotas and Michigan mm-hmm. and Wisconsin, and so it's like I get one night here or two nights there, and then a week at House of Comedy and a week at Acme, and it fills up quick.
Do you, with having kids, or having a kid and you know, being married and everything, do you find it that you prefer, even though they probably don't pay as good, well, comedy doesn't pay as very good at all anyway, it doesn't matter where you go, I guess, but so we can just leave that factor out of it. But do you prefer when you get to do shows in town versus having to go out and do road gigs?
I like them both, but for different reasons. You know, it's always nice being close to home. You know, I live in St. Paul, but from where I'm at in St. Paul, it's like a 12-minute drive to House of Comedy, and it's like a 13-minute drive to Acme. And so at the end of the night when the show is over, I'm like 10 minutes from home, mm-hmm. which is really nice. But when I go out of town, that's where I feel like I get more validation that it's an audience that has never seen me, that doesn't know any of my material, that's never been to one of my shows before. And so if I try something that, like, I'm kind of sick of, like, it was one of the first bits that I ever wrote and I feel like it sort of played out and there's no way that I could make it better. And then I do it, you know, in Grand Forks or Fargo or something and it kills. I'm like, oh, it's still a good bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I get that affirmation. I'm like, okay, well, then I'll keep it. I'll keep that one for a while.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's one thing that's nice about comedy as far as, like, our jokes go. Because you're right, it's easy to, like, when you've been doing a joke for years, to just, like, get sick of it. But it's, you know, and this is something I see a lot with open micers where they'll be like, I got to have a new set for every open mic, which is great. That's good that you've got that writing, that you're writing hard like that. But then those jokes don't, you know, they don't evolve or get polished. But, like, you forget, too, that every time you do that joke, you're probably doing it for a new audience. You know what I mean? So it's not like, even though it's the same to you, the audience doesn't know you, but, you know, necessarily know that joke's 3 or 4 years old or whatever. To them, it's just,
you know. I think if it's a really good joke, I mean, like, I grew up with, we had a turntable and, like, a vinyl record collection. Like, we didn't even get a CD player until 1998. And
did we have the same parents?
And my parents were these, you know, these hippies, and, like, we didn't have a ton of money. They're like, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so I had, like, the same 100 albums, music, comedy, whatever, that I grew up with, and just that's what was in our rotation mm-hmm. unless we were listening to the radio. And I could listen to the same Carlin album or the same Steve Martin album 100 times and laugh every time, because I think when the joke is really good, it's always funny no matter how many times you hear it. And just like a favorite song, it's always good every time you listen to it if it's a great song.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to kind of, like, some, I still have, like, a little bit of imposter syndrome because I haven't been doing this as long as some of the people that I work with. And I mean, that's true for all of us. Like, if you've been doing comedy 10 years, you still haven't been doing comedy as long as somebody who's been doing it 20 years.
Yep. And even as somebody that's been doing comedy for 10 years, I still struggle with imposter syndrome. I mean, that's, I think about that all the time, you know, because I grew up very similar, hippie kind of parents, whatever, and in the Midwest, so, like, everything I know about, like, comedy and stuff was what I saw on TV, and then to, like, meet some of these people in real life, it's so surreal all the time. Like, I still have surreal moments where I'm like, this is my life? Where did this happen? What happened here?
I know. It's crazy. Because, like, at the end of the day, all comics are just people.
Yep.
We're all just people. So I forgot what I was saying about that. Oh, growing, listening, doing the same jokes over and over and being in town versus out of town is like, yeah, there's some that are, I wrote, you know, in the first 6 months I was doing comedy that are still keepers and they're changing. And when you go to an open mic, like Brian Miller used to run Red Menace on Tuesday nights, which was mm-hmm. such a great mic. And I would do the same jokes over and over again, not expecting a laugh, but it was like I wanted to polish it or try a new tag for a show that I had coming up. And Brian would always come up to me afterwards and be like, oh, I really like that new tag. Like, he knew the joke. He'd heard it before, but gave me – and even though I was doing it for, like, the 20th time in 2 months at that mic, he was like, oh, I like how it works with that other bit, or that's really cool that you came up with a new tag. So I think people who appreciate the craft and are always kind of working on the craft will notice and encourage – or at least that's been my experience – notice and encourage when you're changing, just tweaking something mm-hmm. – about an old joke. It can be fresh all over again.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another thing with open mics. They don't have to be just for new jokes, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of times when I go to an open mic, I do have a particular goal in mind, whether it's to do a new joke or if I'm – sometimes I'm trying to rework a joke, you know, to, like, maybe update it or change the order of something,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, it might have a certain way I tell, you know – joke A, B, C, D, and then I'm like, I wonder how it would work if I want D, B, C, A.
Right.
And so then I, you know, switch that out. And that's what I'll go to an open mic for. Or like you said, to try a new tag or whatever it may be. But it's easy to forget that that's also what open mics are for mm-hmm. instead of just, oh, gotta be new material all the time.
And it's fascinating because I have seen other comics do that. And even though I know each of those bits individually, when they change the order, there's still like an element of surprise to mm-hmm. it where it's like, oh, that's so funny. Who knew that that joke could work as part of the setup for this other one?
Yeah.
Because before you changed it, they didn't seem related or connected at all.
Yep. Yep. It's for me, the writing and putting a set together, it's like putting a puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like my favorite part when the pieces start connecting and you're getting that whole picture, that whole set. It's like amazing. mm-hmm. But that's the fun stuff of comedy. This podcast isn't, I mean, it is about some of the fun stuff, but it's also about that bad stuff. So we got to get into that. I always like to have my guests talk about a time where they had a show or a set where they felt like they bombed or the show just wasn't very good. So let's get into that.
This is okay, and honestly, after that experience with my friend James and watching him bomb and then get excited about doing this podcast, he was like, yes, now I can be on Art of Bombing.
I'll have to get him on. I love James.
That also was the first thing that came to mind for me when this happened. And then this was recently. I was at House of Comedy and I was opening for the hilarious Maggie Ferris. And Maggie Ferris and I are friends on Facebook, and I've been on other shows with Maggie Ferris, and I'm a huge fan of Maggie Ferris. And her name is Maggie Ferris, and I was emceeing, and I got up there and decided I was going to do all the announcements and stuff on the top and then do my comedy afterwards. And so I tried to get the crowd warmed up by, like, give it up for your feature comic. Let's hear a round of applause. Please give it up for your headliner, Maggie Ferris. And then I go into my material and, like, it's just – there's nothing. And it's House of Comedy, which also, like, these huge ceilings mm-hmm. and then there's the ventilation system. It can be a tough room anyway. And I'm – but I'm getting – I mean, just nothing. And some of these people are staring at me like they hate me. And I'm like, is this in my head? Did I forget part of the setup? Like, and then I'm like questioning myself on stage. I'm like, no, just keep doing what you're doing. You've timed this out. You know that this, like, 15 minutes works. Just finish your 15 minutes. And I thought, well, that is so strange. And I had another set that I had to do. So, like, I did my 15, and then the middle comic did theirs, and then I was supposed to go up and do another 10 minutes. So I come off stage, and Maggie comes up to me, and she's like, hey, just really quick, my last name is Ferris, like Ferris wheel. And I go, yeah, I know. And she goes, okay, but you said Harris. And I go, no, I didn't. I mean, I was so embarrassed. What I should have said in that moment was, okay, thank you for letting me know. But I was like, no, I know it's Ferris. And she's the kind of headliner that draws a crowd. Like when people come out to see her, like they're her fans. They'll go see her wherever she plays. So I walked into, you know, 40 or 50 people that night in this room and said her name wrong twice. She goes, you said Harris. I go, no, you didn't. She goes, well, you did. Twice.
I was like, oh no.
And I was like, oh my God, that I looked at a room full of her fans and was like, you know, this Harris chick. And they were, I think that they just loved her so much that they were like, who is this that she like got your name wrong? It doesn't. And I could not recover. And they loved the person who middled. They were great for him. And then I went back up there. And it was total shutdown. Like, I got frozen out.
Oh, man.
For another 10 minutes. I think the only time they cheered or clapped was when I was like, okay,
that's
give it
my
up
turn.
To your headliner, Maggie Ferris. And they were like, wow.
Wow. That's interesting how crowds can do that. Because you see that a lot at comedy contests too, mm-hmm. where like when like with comedy contests, the audience usually, because most comedy contests are bringer shows essentially, where mm-hmm. you know, because there's an audience vote element to it or whatever, and so it's like one thing I've noticed is that contests, the audience will be there for a particular comic, and so then they think they can't clap or laugh or at anybody else. They can
right.
only hold that support for who they came to see, and that's kind of that same thing where it was like, because you got the name wrong, they were yeah. just like, well, that's my friend. I'm a fan of theirs, and you can't even get their name right. We're done with
we're
you.
Done. Done with you.
Checking out.
And I mean, it was like, I've bombed before. I've bombed a ton. Like, I went to Grumpy's every Wednesday for the first couple years that I was doing comedy, and that is like the black abyss. Like, it's just a void. Just your voice goes out into this tunnel of comics who are not listening. They're just eating tater tots and waiting for their turn and talking to other comedians. And I could do that, and like, it was uncomfortable, but it was like, I'm not here for a response. I'm here to practice saying the stuff that I wrote. And I've bombed at Acme at the open mic, and I've bombed at House of Comedy at other shows. But this was, I mean, I could feel it. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, oh, you hate me.
Yeah. And it's amazing with audiences that, because they can make a choice. I mean, they can make a choice to not like you just based on how you look when you come up on stage.
Yeah.
And make an opinion about you, and then decide, well, I don't like this person for whatever reason, so I'm not going to enjoy them, and then purposely not. So, and which makes it tougher, because in a situation like that, there's absolutely nothing that you're going to be able to do mm-hmm. to win them back. Other than, like, in that situation, you know, did she tell you that, like, before your second set?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think the only thing at that point that maybe could have had some saving grace is to go up there and acknowledge that you messed up her name.
Yeah,
or something, and apologize,
honestly,
or something.
I don't remember if I did or not.
No, that's...
And it was her birthday.
So, oh, no!
Yeah, it was, like, her birthday party. Somebody brought a cake, and then I was like, this chick...
Oh,
Maggie Harris.
That's bad. Did you go back and listen to like audio or video?
I did. And then so I sent her a message on Messenger, and I was like, that was an unprofessional way to respond. I should have just said, thank you for telling me. And then I went back and listened to it, and I was like, oh, I definitely said Harris twice. And so then I messaged her again, and I was like, yep, I for sure said Harris. I definitely did that. And I'm very sorry. And I'm also embarrassed because I'm a big fan of yours. And she was wonderful. She was so nice about it. She was like, oh, everybody screws up. Like, it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. No, she's great. I've only met her a couple times, but she's fantastic. That's good, though, that because it's good when they're like headliners like that that are nice, because there's some people when you mess up their names or whatever, it's it. You know,
yeah.
And they'll form an opinion that whether they like you or not. Yeah. Usually not, and then that's it for that.
It was, that was like just 25 of the most brutal minutes that I ever did. And it's so, it's tough when it's stuff like you're doing your A material. Like at that point, I've been doing comedy for several years. I was like, I've been on the road as a feature. Like I know that I can crush for 25 or 30 minutes in like a hot room. And I was like, this is literally my best. This is all of the best stuff that I have. And you are giving me nothing. those are the moments when I really doubt. I'm like, should I even be doing this? Like, don't quit your day job. This is a bad idea.
Yep. Definitely been there. It's interesting though, because, you know, because this is the thing too, when you're the host, there's a lot going on in your head. So it's easy to make little errors like that and not even realize it because, you know, like I said, you gotta worry about whatever the club announcements have. And some clubs have more announcement than others. You gotta, you know, remember the credits of the comics. You gotta remember, obviously, how to pronounce their names, remember their right names. Like that's all things. Plus you gotta try to warm the audience up. So you have to, you know, you got to be thinking about your material. So there's like a lot of different things going on in the MC's brain that, you know, an audience doesn't have any clue. It's not like you can just go show up, go perform, and that's it. You know, you have to, all these different things going on. So it's easy to make little errors like that.
Yeah. And when Chad Daniels did your show, when I was listening to that episode, and he said, like, being an MC is its own skill set, and it is. And usually, like, I'm really good at it. Like, I've worked in restaurants for 20 years, and I'm the youngest in my family, and I'm just generally have been, like, a showman, and I have no problem keeping track of, like, okay, bathrooms, promotions, email list, credits. Like, I can hold all of that. And, you know, come out there with, like, woohoo energy, like, all right, let's get clapping. And I had them and then I lost them.
slip of the name.
You just can't recover from that. But
no. Do you ever find when you're hosting that going from the transition from doing the announcements to trying to go into your jokes that sometimes it's harder? And I suppose because it depends on the club too. Some clubs do some of the announcements prior, you know, the mm-hmm. typical housekeeping stuff. No table talk, cell phones, all that stuff. But there's shows where they don't do that, and as the MC, you have to go up and do that stuff. And it seems like you're enforcing rules, so then the audience is mm-hmm. like, well, this isn't fun. This guy doesn't want to have fun. He's telling us not to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then you got to, like, try to go be funny, but they're like, screw this guy. He told me all these rules.
There is, and so I try to do, like, I feel like since, you know, your job as the MC is really to get the room warmed up, get them laughing, mm-hmm. get them focused, get them paying attention. If I can, I'll do the announcements at the end. But I did, this was my second choice for my bombing story. I did a show, one of David Harris's show at Running Aces Casino, and he was nervous about this show because somebody had performed there like a month prior. It was a headliner, and they were like so raunchy and so blue and so foul that he was like really nervous about keeping the show clean and keeping it really professional. And so he was like, I really just want to do this show by the book. So you're emceeing. Here's what I want up top. I want you to make the announcements first, and then this is how much comedy you do. No F-bombs, you know, whatever. And for me, like, swearing is just a natural part of how I speak, and it always has been. So when I have to do a show that's clean, I'm already on edge. It's like, fuck, don't say fuck. Whatever you do, just don't say fuck.
Oh, man, Well, you listen to the podcast, so you know this ain't a clean podcast. I was going to be like,
So I'm like, okay, I have to do the announcements up top, and he wants me to go through all of these things. And so I did. I was like, hey, I'm your host and MC for the evening. Are you guys ready to have a good time? They clapped once, and I was like, cool, there's some housekeeping stuff we got to go through, and, you know, here's where you can find tickets for the next event, and here's what the raffle prizes are, and here's where the bathrooms are. And it was probably between 30 and 60 seconds. Which is not that long, but it feels like a long time if there's not a joke in there.
Oh, absolutely. 30 to, almost up to a minute with no laugh line, like, or anything. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. And so I finished the announcements, and I literally, like, on the inhale, like, I was taking a breath, and I was about to start my material, and this guy yells out from the back of the room, tell a joke.
Oh, Jesus.
If I had felt free enough to say whatever I wanted to that guy, I think I could have recovered from it. But I was like, don't tell him to go fuck himself. Like, don't, you can't do that here. And so I just went, okay, you guys want to hear a joke? And so, like, I started my set on, like, this mousy pushover milk toast, you can walk all over me vibe that I also just could not pull out of. I couldn't get him back after that.
Oh, no.
Tell a joke.
Okay.
Okay. Here it comes. Oh, which is the worst way to start a joke.
Yeah, especially asking the crowd if they want to hear a joke because they're at a comedy show. It's like, of course they want to hear a joke.
And then I did something I maybe shouldn't have done. Like, David's brought me on other gigs, but he hasn't had me back at Running Faces. Because the end of the night, when I had to give out prizes, like tickets for other shows and stuff. And so I gave out the prizes and I was like, hey, wait, I go, one more thing. Who was the guy that yelled out, tell a joke? And this guy raised his hand and I was like, congratulations, sir. You're the only person to ever heckle me before I started doing my material. Thanks. Have a good night. And I was like, oh, Elise, like you didn't need to go there. You maybe didn't.
Could have just left that one alone.
Yeah, but I didn't.
That's, oh man. That's one thing I've, because, you know, doing the announcements and then transitioning into the jokes, like I said, one thing that I've started doing, and some people might think it's hacky, but I'm like, whatever, it works, is I go up there, I'm like, yeah, we're getting ready to start the show. Before I bring up your next performer, I gotta go through some housekeeping stuff, and I do the stuff, and then I'm like, all right, now, let's get that energy up, and we'll bring up our MC, and then I bring myself up. I'll, like, do my own intro, and then I run around the stage back to the microphone. And that itself usually gets a laugh,
yeah,
because they're like, oh, I didn't see that coming, you know? Yeah. And that's not, like, something I've seen other comics do that, but that's, like, a really good idea, because there's that, it's hard to go from, like you said, doing a minute of announcements with no joke to, okay, now it's time to be funny. Mm-hmm. And then the crowd's just like, should have been funny as soon as, we were waiting for you to be funny as soon as you walked on stage. When you tell a joke that does not work, or you feel like you're starting to bomb, what starts going through your mind in that moment?
Shit, fuck, god damn it. I hate you. I hate me and I hate you. That's initially is panic. It's panic first. And then a little bit of resentment. Like, that's usually my first response is like, you're not getting this. This is funny. And then pretty quickly after that, humility. Like, it's my job to write a good joke. It's my job to be so funny that even the person who came there with no intent to laugh at a joke can't help themselves. Like, mm-hmm. I have seen people just murder what I thought was the worst room. And so that shows me, like, if you're really funny and you're a really good joke writer, there is no such thing as a bad audience. There are rooms that are tougher. And so the first thing I think is, like, fuck you. Then fuck me. And then, how can I make this better? Like, what isn't working about this? Because I know it's funny. Mm-hmm. And it's usually something that's a little bit touchy. Like, I got censored at an open mic. And I think what happened was I got censored at an open mic about 2 or 3 years ago. And so I tried to turn it into a bit because I was like, I know there's actual irony here and there's something really funny in that. I just have to get to it. But I was so mad about what happened that it came off, I think, as just this really, like, poor me. It was like a ragey rant. It wasn't mm-hmm. a joke yet. So it was like, okay, if what I want to say isn't working, then I need to turn it into a joke.
Yep, yeah. Now I'm curious. You got censored at an open mic? Were you that filthy?
No.
Like, I've seen you do comedy. I'm like, how do you get censored at an open mic?
And I did end up turning it into a bit, which, as an aside, I might actually send you the audio clip for that instead of the YouTube video link that I sent you. Because when I did turn it into a bit, it crushed. I got 3 applause breaks in 3 minutes at an open mic at Acme, and I was still, like, new. It was before I worked there. And so what happened was I went to this open mic, and I was talking about, like, my nieces and my nephews and my son and, like, the differences that I see in the ways that they interact with each other and the world around them. And I said, you know, boys and girls they're different, and here's the differences that I see. And then I went back the following week, and the host came up to me and he was like, hey, I see that you signed up to go on tonight? And I was like, well, yeah, that's a fucking open mic. And he goes, well, that's great. And I'm going to let you go on tonight, but I am going to have to ask you not to do any of that material that you did last week. And I go, are you for real? And he goes, yes. I go, why? And mind you, that night that I talked about boys and girls being different, there was one comic who said that pussy smells like hot garlic butter. There was another guy who said that his dad still thinks it's funny to use the N-word and then talked about all the racist jokes that his dad tells. There was another guy who said he should put a picture of his dick on his credit card so that his girlfriend will remember what it looks like when she uses his credit card because she doesn't go down on him anymore. And so this is all men between the ages of like 21 and 25, and it was a lot of like porn and weed and
so this censorship is the embodiment of edgelord gatekeeping comedy.
Yeah, so I go, well, why can't I talk about it? I'm racking my brain. I'm like, what could I possibly have said that was worse than any of that? And he goes, well, the last time that you were here, there was somebody in the audience who got offended that you said there are only two genders. And I go, no, I didn't. I did not. You know how I know that? I know it because I wrote it, I said it, and also I recorded it. What I said was, there's a difference between boys and girls. And I was talking specifically about the kids in my family. I never said non-binary children don't exist or that trans people aren't, that isn't real. And he was like, well, still, if you want to go on tonight, you can't say that here. And I was like, you're kidding me. I'm not allowed to say that there's a difference between boys and girls. And he was like, no.
Wow. Wow. Did you continue to go to that open mic?
Oh, I did. And I made him. And then I was like, fuck you so much. I'm twice your age. So this is where it turned into a bit. I was like, I'm not taking my marching orders from a 21-year-old U of M student. You're the people who ate Tide Pods. You cannot be in charge. Because I go, all right, fine, I won't. And then I went up there and I said that we're living in the age of tolerance, and I think that that's really good and it's important. And I got like a little woo and a clap up front, and I go, but I am for sure going to teach my son to hate one specific group of people. And I know that that's racist, but I feel like you're going to be on my side when I tell you who it is. I go, ready? It is white men who jaywalk. Not all white men, not all jaywalkers, just white men who jaywalk. You already have all the things. Don't also make us wait for you to cross the street in the middle of the block. Just go to the corner like a fucking adult. And then I told the whole room that he told me I was not allowed to say there was a difference between boys and girls.
And oh, he just, that's funny.
And he didn't light me. He didn't turn off the mic. He just slumped down in his seat. And I was like, no, hey, stand by it.
Yeah, right? You're the one that said it. Own it.
And then I said his full name at a different open mic later that week. I'm like, this is the kid who's trying to tell me what I can and can't say. And a friend of his was like sitting in the front row, and he like just did the slow shake of the head. He was shaking his head at me while I was telling the story. And I go, fuck you. You want to live in call out culture? Then be prepared to get called out when you fuck up and take it on the chin like a goddamn adult. And then he just like slumped down in his chair. I was like, I'm just sick of this. I've been changing diapers and cleaning up dog shit and taking my car in to get service, and I'm in graduate school and I'm serving and I'm sweaty and fuck you. Fuck you.
Wow. Yeah. I think after telling this story, you definitely need to send me that audio. That should be the clip that plays. That will play prior to you hearing the story about this. So you'll hear they're going to hear that clip, and then they'll hear the story and they'll be like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Now I get it. That's great.
I think you also need to have a little bit of that to do stand-up. Is like, well, you can't say that here. Oh, fucking watch me.
Yeah. But, I mean, I get some things being, you know, where we have to, there's got to be a fine line on some things. And we got to watch as comics. We got to kind of patrol ourselves. You know, as a white, straight white man.
Yeah.
I definitely ain't going to go on stage and talk about race relations and drop a bunch of N-words. Right. You know what I mean? Like, that's.
Right.
I don't think anybody else in my situation should either. You know? Yeah. I'm like, no, if I see somebody that does it, I'm going to call them out. I'm going to be like, no, don't do that.
And I think we absolutely, like, we have to be accountable accountable for and responsible to our audience for everything that comes out of our mouths.
Yep.
Even if it's accidental, even if it's like uninformed and ignorant, right? The problem was, I'm like, you're trying to punish me for something I did not say. If you heard me say there's only two genders, then you made up something that never came out of my mouth.
And that's where there's a fine line, because now on that side of the coin, in your situation, it's not about what you said, it's about what you didn't say, and somebody getting offended because you didn't include them, essentially. Essentially, that's what it is. You didn't include them in this particular thing.
And it turned into a really interesting conversation because I got spicy. I got a little fiery about it, and I posted a bunch of shit on Facebook and Instagram. And then another comic in the scene was like, well, I have a child that's, you know, gender nonconforming or non-binary. And, like, what about my kids? Like, when you tell jokes that only involve boys and girls in that way, you're not including, you know, kids like my child. And I go, okay, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's a great point. And I have an answer for that. Like, one, I was talking about the kids in my own family, those specific six children who are, as far as anybody knows yet, straight, cisgendered kids. And secondly, I was making fun of them. Like, call me crazy. I don't think it's a great idea to take one of the most vulnerable groups that we have, who have a proclivity toward, like, depression, isolation, and suicidal thoughts and actions because they're already so alienated. Like, why would I take non-binary or trans children and make them the butt of a joke? I'm not going to be the comic to step in that. I'm not going to do it. You be as mad as you want. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's because like I said, there's got to be a line somewhere. But you know, it's weird on how it can be tippy-toey like that, where you know something like that, not including it, could get you censored at an open mic. And that goes back to what I said. That's straight up edgelord gatekeeping is what that is. That's, well, this is my mic. I'm going to, you know, control whatever. Especially when you say, you know, like you said, when some people are going up there and saying the things that they're saying, which is way more offensive and graphic than talking about kids in your family.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
So that was a very long answer to the question, but like, yeah, when I try something new like that and it's not working and people tighten up or they back off, I'm like, I know this is funny. I don't want to leave it alone. I just want to fix it.
Mm-hmm. And how do you react when you tell a joke that works 9 times out of 10? It does fine every time you tell it, and then there's like one time you tell it and you get nothing. Like, you're expecting, you know how, like, you're telling a joke and you know where you're going to get the laugh, you know where you're going to get the applause break, you know all the things are coming because this joke has worked that many times, and then you get nothing. How do you react to that?
Then I do sometimes put it on the audience. I'm like, usually that works, guys. I feel like this one might be on you. That's one of my best jokes. And sometimes people will laugh at that, and then sometimes people won't laugh at that. And then you've just dug a deeper hole. But usually, like, I think I'm kind of transparent on stage that way, especially when I'm working on new stuff. I'm like, oh, well, Thursday night liked that bit a lot more than you guys. That's okay. You don't have to love everything I do. That's fine. I'm going to keep it, though.
I know it works. Come back another time. You'll see.
Yeah.
It'll grow on you. The bumming a bombing, the dreadful feeling you feel when you bomb, how does that affect you, and how long does it typically last for you?
Usually it lasts for the duration of the evening, but not much longer than that. And I was thinking about this on my way over here today, too, is I'm sober. I've been clean and sober almost 15 years. And so I can't, you know, when I get off stage – and it's brutal and it sucks and it was a terrible experience and nobody laughed and like, or I forgot part of the setup or I forgot a punchline or I just dug my own hole, whatever it is that made it so awful. I can't get off stage and do a couple of shots and take a hitty off, you know, a hit off a one. Like I can't blot it out. I have to just feel it until it goes away. But it doesn't usually, like, I have gone to bed before thinking, maybe you're a writer. maybe you're not actually a stand-up. Maybe you're just a writer. And that's okay. You're a very good writer. And then by the time I wake up, I'm like, okay, these are the mics I'm going to this week because I'm going to do it again and I'm going to do it better and I'm going to find a way to fix it. So it's, you know, but if it's really bad, like I always, even if it was a bad set, I will listen to my recording on the way home from wherever I am. Mm-hmm. If it's really bad, I don't listen to it.
Yeah. I'm bad at listening to my stuff back, whether it's good or bad. That's something I got to definitely get better at. Which, that's a good lead-in, though, to the next thing I like to ask. What do you try to do when to fix a joke that's not working, or, you know, you go back, you listen to your set, what do you try to look for, you know, to analyze to make it better?
Well, one of the things that I know about myself, which I've kind of known from the beginning, is I tend to get lost in the setup. Like, just as because my foundation is in writing, like creative nonfiction writing and storytelling, there's so much stuff up top before I ever get to a punchline that just doesn't need to be there. And for me, the hardest part, and what continues to be the hardest part, and I have to write like I will literally fill two or three pages of a yellow legal pad trying to figure out how to distill it to one or two sentences. And that it's brutal for me.
That sounds like it. Ugh. That's a lot of notes.
Yeah, it's so hard, and I hate that part of it, but when I love the joke, it's worth the work.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's really worth the work when you get the joke to where you want it, and then it works.
Yeah.
That's like one of my favorite parts about comedy is, like, the nuts and bolts of trying to get a joke to work.
Yeah. So for me, it's hours and hours of, like, longhand writing, because that's my process.
That's interesting. So you write everything out word for word and then try to get it down as short as you can. So you start writing long form and then work on editing it out.
Yeah.
How do you, because that's a good writing process, but it's like when you're trying to take like a page full of a joke to like two sentences, that's a lot of editing.
Mm-hmm.
Like how do you get from whole page to.
Well, so then that's where open mics come in. It's like if I think that I have found the 2 to 4 lines that will set me up the way that I want, I'll maybe come up with like the best 3 of those sets, and then I'll go to 3 different open mics, and then I'll try each of those different setups to see if any of them work. I also happen to be married to a very funny person who is not a comic and is just generally better at like big picture things.
Mm-hmm.
Like we just, our brains just work differently. He's much more of a, like an inductive thinker. And I tend to be more deductive. And so I'll tell him the whole story. This person said this, and this happened here, and then this happened here, and then this person was here, and then I was there, and then they said this. And he'll go, oh, okay, so what you're talking about is X. And he can distill the general premise to, like, a single word, because his brain is just different than mine. And so sometimes I will run bits by him. I'm like, this thing happened, and it's super funny, but I don't know how to make it a joke. And he's like, oh, here's what you need to tell them up top.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a good little tool to have in the toolbox.
Yeah.
Somebody that can help.
A very funny spouse.
Yeah. Well, and it's good to have, like, sometimes to have a different perspective on things. Because you're, like, workshopping with other people can help a lot, you know, with a joke. Because sometimes we think too hard on a joke. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we get in our head on a particular thing and we just can't see past what we want to see.
Yeah.
And we need somebody else to come in and be like, well, hey, what about this? And show a different perspective. And then we're just, oh! It's like right. They put the key in and unlock the door.
Which is, it's so great. I love that.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we talked about the bombing. And when I get towards the end of the podcast, I like to go out on positive stuff. One of the things I do, I have an art bombing playlist for music that gets you pumped. Not necessarily for comedy, but just for whatever. Do you have a song that gets you pumped?
Yes. I mean, sometimes it depends on my mood. One song that will always make me laugh, like I find getting in a good headspace for going on stage is to kind of be laughing already. Dick in a Box. Every time. Every fucking time. It's so funny. Also,
that's funny.
The Pointer Sisters, Automatic is a good one. Anything that makes me think of like campy 80s stuff. And then, what's the other one? Oh, this is a good one because people don't know them. If you don't know them, you should. The Nylons. They have an album called One Size Fits All. And pretty much any song on that album, but I suppose I should pick one. Up the Ladder.
Up the Ladder. All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
The Nylons are...
Some songs to throw on the playlist.
They are an all-male, mostly gay a cappella pop group from Canada that was very big in Canada in the 80s. And it's, if you can find any of their music videos, I promise it will make your day.
I'll have to go check that out. That sounds pretty interesting. Now, going on the opposite of a story where you bombed or a show that you bombed, what so far in your comedy career, what's been one of your favorite or best gigs?
Oh, man. So this kind of goes back to the out-of-town thing. When you're in a kind of rural area and you're outside the cities, those shows are sometimes the best because they don't get comedy there a lot. And so when they do, like, everybody comes out and mm-hmm. they're there to have a good time. And, like, the energy in those rooms is incredible. And my favorite one of those probably was it actually wasn't even that far out of town, and I shouldn't call it, like, rural. It was in Faribault at a historic theater called the Paradise Center for the Arts, which Nathan Smesrud booked and produced. And I think it was the first one that he had there. So he found the venue, and he was like, I really want to do a show here, and I want to do it in the theater. And they were like, well, we have another space upstairs that's a smaller kind of atrium, and it seats like 50 or 60. But, you know, the theater seats 330 people or 300 people, and we just don't want to give that much space and then not sell that many tickets. And he said, I promise you, if you give me that space, I will sell it out. And he did. It was over capacity. They put out folding chairs in the back, so it was like 314 people.
Wow.
And that was my first time performing stand-up comedy in a theater, like with a balcony and a stage. And it was, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps right now thinking about it. It was so much fun. And so I think there were 7 comics on the show. There was one headliner, but for the most part, kind of the openers and the middle people did between 7 and 12 minutes. And I still go back and watch that tape and listen to the recording because that was the first time I had tried all of my best stuff at that point together. And I think I did like 13 minutes, and all of it killed. And then when I left the stage, like I left to this massive applause, and all the comics backstage were having fun too. Like we were all thrilled that for each other, that everyone was crushing. And I remember standing in the wings with Ahmed Khalaf and Tommy Bear, and one of them said something like, this is it. Like, this is the dream. It doesn't get better than this. When you're a headliner and you're on the road and you're away from home, like, we're an hour from home with our friends and we just crushed in front of 300 people. Like, these are the best nights we're going to have. And it was like knowing how great that was while I was in it was really special. And it was such a good show. Like, Nathan did such a great job producing it. Everyone who was on did their best material. The audience was fantastic. And then he has continued to do shows in Faribault at a few other venues, and I hope that I can go back to one because it was unbelievable.
Yeah, I actually think I just saw he just did his first one back since the pandemic here not too long ago. I thought within the last couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah, it was back at Paradise Center for the Arts.
Yep, that's what I thought I saw. All right, well, the final question that I do, it's actually a game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20. I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be related to comedy.
All right. I'll go with 14.
14 it is. All right. What will finally break the internet?
TikTok. It's for sure going to be something on TikTok. I think if Donald Trump gets on TikTok, that will break the internet.
I think that's a very, very accurate answer to that. Well, this has been so much fun. Where can people find you online? Good point. Social medias.
Yeah, all of the social medias, all of the handle is the same. I like consistency. It's just at Elise Cole Comedy. ELISECOLE. And then I have a website, which currently will tell you that I don't have a website because I haven't paid for it yet this year. But it's EliseColeComedy.com for upcoming shows where I'm going to be performing. Probably Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook are the best place to find that.
Perfect. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you. Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production. Hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.